Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Pro Wrestling Show in association with TalkSport. Coming up on today's show, the promoters behind Pro Wrestling Eve join us in the studio to talk all about the women's scene in the UK. We'll also talk about the latest WWE TV products, a little bit of the big indie shows in the UK coming this week, and a massive announcement for All In. This is the Pro Wrestling Show. Hello, welcome to the Pro Wrestling Show. Will Gavin.
Hello, I'm John Jackson. I like that we're recording this on International Kissing Day, but we're not together in the same physical room, so unfortunately, you know, we can't, not that we would, but we can't kiss.
You made that awkward by saying not that we would. Why wouldn't we? Why do you object to my soft, soft touch?
Because you're constantly rejecting me. No, I don't know. I don't know. Why am I saying this? Why am I talking about this? Hang on.
I don't know. You were the one that made it happen.
Yeah, I thought it'd be an interesting point to make, but I've just realised it's totally not.
All right, well, let's move on and talk about some graps then. Have you had a good week, mate?
I've been very, very busy. However, I still made it to the graps in Milton Keynes, as you know, for the New Japan and Rev Pro co-promoted event, which was fun and different. I don't think it was the best day of the two, from what I've heard. I've heard that the one in Manchester was seemed to have a lot better matches, especially Jack Sabre Jr. versus Jack. Who's Jack? Zack Sabre Jr. versus Okada, which I won't. I mean, shall I spoil it?
Yeah, I mean, it's already on there on demand service. So,
Zack Sabre Jr. won, which a lot of people were surprised about. I think we only got an Okada tag team match, which is a bit of a shame, really. And I think that before it was quite obvious that lots of people in that room were there to really see him. I mean, obviously they're there for the event, but you know, he was the main event, and he kind of did a tag match, and he didn't really do much. And a lot of people were very frustrated with that, and they were sort of unsure. There was like, is he injured? Is he sort of just taking it easy? What's the deal? And then obviously put on a really good match with Zach the next night. And I think a lot of people felt a little bit shortchanged in Milton Keynes, but it was nice to go to a different promotion. Obviously, when we saw New Japan advertised, we were like, yes. So we got tickets straight away. It was a little bit disappointing because most of the big stars of New Japan that, you know, that we love, the Young Bucks, Cody, Marty, all those kind of people, they were doing a different event in America. So I kind of felt like we got the B team, and I don't mean the comical tag team from Monday Night Raw.
Did you, how did you feel about Milton Keynes itself, John?
Milton Keynes is such a weird place. Like, I don't want to be negative, and it's not terrible. Like, it's just weird. It's like a massive car park.
It's like an industrial, like not like in an old style industrial estate, but like, you know, the modern style ones where you've just got a lot of, it's just outside of town. You've got a lot of office buildings. There's probably a park and ride bus service, and it's like that, but it's a whole town of it. Not just, you know, a small area near the Madstad.
We parked by the station, and the station is like the centre of Milton Keynes because I don't know why. And it was, we kind of looked on a map and it said food, and we were like, yeah, we need food, we've got 2 hours to kill. So we just looked, and like where it said food was just didn't look plausible because it looked like it was an industrial estate. And we carried on walking and kind of got there, and there was no food where it said there would be food. And then you literally turn a corner, and then there's like a weird square in the middle of loads of office buildings with all the sort of chain restaurants. And it just made literally no sense.
Well, it's because, John, it is a massive office complex. That's all Milton Keynes really is. I do not understand, like, the fact that people actually live there, it doesn't, that doesn't compute with me. And so that square, on the average Thursday lunchtime, will be heaving with people in suits going and buying their Subway or whatever. So that's why it's like that. It's I'm not a fan at all.
No, and, you know, if you live in Milton Keynes, I'm sure there are nice bits. I actually tweeted a sort of jokey picture of, like, a really derelict-looking bin, and, like, welcome to Milton Keynes, and some guy got a bit shirty with me on Twitter and replied with some pictures of some fields. But, like, that's not Milton Keynes, so, you know. Anyway, don't mind. Basically, we were just sort of confused because on a day where there was no cars around, it looks like a real big empty airport car park. But I suppose when it's the weekdays, 9 to 5, it's probably rammed and, you know, it's thriving, if that's the right word. It's probably not. Anyway, I had a Subway, so, you know.
Oh, I didn't actually know that. I just guessed the right sandwich. Look at me.
Yeah.
So I actually haven't been to any independent shows this week, although I am off to first ever Riptide show. It's a funny one because normally, obviously, we do the show on a Wednesday, but because I did the interview with Dan and Emily Reed from Pro Wrestling Eve. If you're not familiar with Pro Wrestling Eve, they are the UK's premier all-female wrestling company, and it's an interesting chat, and they obviously, I mean, they have very strong views and very strong opinions, and I think mostly pretty justified, and we have a bit of back and forth on some of it, but when you look at the percentage of bookings that go to female wrestlers in major promotions, you can understand why there is a bit of a gripe, and why the idea of WWE coming in and hoovering up talent when there's already not a lot of opportunities for them to be booked elsewhere. It's a really interesting conversation. So we've got that coming up. But, so that went out on the radio version of the show on My Extra Time show. And so this is literally just pod version. John was too busy going off, I don't know, flirting with people over ribs or something.
Flirting with someone over ribs.
Yeah, you and Ryan, your relationship is a disgrace.
A rib eating competition where we met some very interesting characters. Like, imagine the kind of people that would apply for a rib eating competition and then, like, double it. That's the kind of people we were dealing with. They were all very nice, but they were very big characters.
Did they have to pass, like, a preliminary stage in order to...
Yeah, like, there's a tournament-type thing. They've got three different restaurants, this place. And the guy that won... I'm going to tell you now, and I think that you could have beat this guy. The guy that won, in half an hour, ate 10 ribs. Like, they're quite... You know, they're not... They're sizable ribs. They are sizable ribs, but... There was a fellow there called Nick who had a big, basically looked like a sort of ginger wizard, and he was wearing a New Orleans Saints cap as well. So a ginger wizard who likes football, and his tactic, he had the right tactic. Everyone else was like chewing it off the bone. He was like military precision with a knife, just chop everything off, clean the bone off, and then just shove the meat in your mouth, because the whole point was you have to get the bone to be totally clean for it to count.
Clean bone.
And he came second, and this big guy, Paul, came first, and he ate 10 ribs and like he won. And in the interview we did with him afterwards, he said, like, we were like, oh, what are you going to do now? You're going to go and sort of collapse somewhere and fall into a rib coma. And he said, no, my mates are turning up and we're going to have some hot chicken wings, which not only will solve my hunger after eating 10 ribs, but also it will help them leave me.
Oh, God. This is what I meant by flirting.
Yeah, and we're using this for a commercial, like a corporate video. And the bloke's like looking at me going, can't use that.
Yeah.
Definitely can't use that. Anyway, this is not wrestling. Wrestling.
So
tonight,
I'm off
you're going to Riptide, which I'm so jealous of because I've been looking at the lineup for this for a while, and it's sexy. Will,
it is sexy. We've got I'm just going to go through the card because it's really, really good. Naoko Tanizaki up against Chris Brooks in Tanizaki's. That's one of the first times he's wrestled over in general. Certainly the first time he's wrestled in Riptide. You've got Chuck Mambo against Eddie Dennis, best friends going head to head in the ring. And it is for Chuck Mambo's place at the Brighton Championship Tournament. There's also a Brighton Championship Tournament qualifier between Money versus Everybody and Tony Storm and B Priestley teaming up with that one. The Aussie Open Challenge returns. We've got Charlie Morgan, the EVE Pro Wrestling Women's Champion, up against Flash Morgan Webster in a Brighton Championship Tournament qualifier. Volta going up against Mike Bailey, which could be, you know, that's got match of the year potential to it, and it's about...
He should just move to the UK.
Fourth on the card, absolutely. Jordan Devlin against Jack Sexsmith, which is another Brighton Championship Tournament qualifier, and a big multi-person match for the Brighton Championship Tournament with Cara Noir, Millie McKenzie, Adam Brooks, Ginny, Kid Lykos, and Vader Scott. It looks pretty, pretty, pretty good.
That is tasty. And I think the Brighton Championship Tournament is the one they're doing over Pride weekend, isn't it? It's the first week or weekend of August, I think.
Very possibly. I am Googling furiously while you say that. But
all I'm going to say is I would hate for Jack Sexsmith not to be on the card for Pride weekend because he would be in his element.
We should definitely, because you can't come tonight. And if anyone's listening to this before, say, like 5 o'clock this afternoon and wants to come to Riptide with me and lives in Brighton or south of London, come along, because I'm all on my lonesome.
Yeah, come and hang out with Will.
Second to the 4th of August. That is when it is.
Yeah,
you were correct.
There you go, first weekend in August. By the way, if you're listening to this now and you went to Riptide because it's after Friday... at Pro Wrestle Show, it'd be good to know what you thought about it, because you know, obviously if we do go to the international championship tournament, whatever it's called, it'd be good to know how things went down, so that we got a bit of story behind it, which would be nice.
They have £55 tickets for the whole weekend and £20 tickets for general admission still available for each of the nights for that championship tournament, and with the quality of these qualifiers and some of the people I already know are through, like Spike Gervais and Jimmy and people like that, I think it's going to be an excellent lineup. Right, let's a couple of other bits of news. All in continue to slap me and John in the face for not
booking tickets.
Yeah, for deciding that, like, even though the flights were only about 300 and something quid, we didn't get them.
If anyone is an air hostess pilot, you know, sneakers on. You can come on the podcast. Why not? I don't know. Just, you know, you never know.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's going to happen, but they've announced Marty Skrull against... They've announced the villain against the Rainmaker, basically. Skrull Okada is going to be all in.
I'm just annoyed now.
With a lineup that already includes, obviously, Nick Aldis, Cody, Rey Mysterio, The Young Bucks, Adam Page, Kenny Omega, Stephen Amell, Tessa Blanchard, Phoenix, Pentagon Jr., Chelsea Green, Joey Janela. It's a pretty, pretty... Matt Cross. It's a pretty,
Madison
pretty
Rain.
Good lineup. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm annoyed. Like, the trouble is, I just fear they're going to announce something else and it's going to just get me more tempted. And then at the last minute, we're going to be dropping a grand just to go to Chicago for a day. But... I don't know, they haven't announced a streaming deal yet, have they? And I think they've been talking about how they're planning on doing so, but it's kind of getting quite close now. You'd think they'd have something in place. Maybe they have, and they just haven't announced it, but it would be nice to think that we could watch that live if we can't make it. And, you know, with a show that size and that ambitious, you would hope that we can watch it everywhere, and they'll probably make a load of money out of it.
I have my fingers firmly crossed.
Good. Do you want to talk about... WWE's offering this week, or do you want to talk about Finn Balor's ass?
I don't want to talk about Finn Balor's ass any more than it's already been discussed in various WhatsApp groups already. Finn Balor's ass has popped up in at least 3 WhatsApp groups that I'm in, and I'm okay with not seeing it anymore.
I was just going to say, I was looking at it because I quite like the Baron Corbin and Finn Balor sort of banter on Twitter, top banter, and I was just looking at his ass crack, and I've decided that every week now that he tweets a picture, I'm just going to liken it to a different colour on the Dulux paint chart. So this week it's purple amethyst.
Wonderful. Thank you. I appreciate that. We should talk about the Ring of Honor. We talked about the fact that last week that the title didn't change hands from Dalton Castle on the pay-per-view, and we were slightly surprised by that.
Yeah. You've got a theory, haven't you?
Well, yeah. So have we talked about the pay-per-view itself? Was that after our show last week?
It was after the show. No, it was after the show.
Oh, I feel there's been so much wrestling, so much time between when we last spoke, John. I completely forgot to talk about it. It was great. Genuinely fantastic. The Ring of Honor Best in the World was one of the best pay-per-views I've watched in a while, and it really, it built steam over time. It had some fantastic matches. Jay Lethal against Kushida was fantastic. Really, really good street fight between Punishment Martinez and Adam Page. The Briscoes and the Young Bucks might have put on their best match yet, and the Briscoes continue to look fantastic. The only problem was it built this huge, huge head of steam. And then we got a world title match, which was much shorter than we were expecting, and where Dalton Castle came out on top. And I was stunned, to be honest, because we know that there's this whole Nick Aldis and Cody storyline to All In, that he's meant to have the title and they're going title for title, head to head. The problem is that, and I think this is, my initial theory on it was that, okay, so Cody is facing Kenny Omega this weekend. You'll be able to stream that one as well. I think it's on Access TV in the States, so I don't know how you stream it, but they're fighting New Japan champion against what was meant to be, in theory, the Ring of Honor champion. That's what we believed it was going to be. They're fighting for the IWGP championship, and basically, I think that they didn't want to put, Ring of Honor didn't want to put the title on Cody to have yet again their champion lose to a New Japan champion. It keeps happening that that's how the shows line up. And New Japan aren't going to see a belt dropped or a champion lose to a champion from another organization. So I thought, oh, fine. So they'll just find a way to, Cody won't win the title this week. He'll go through to the match with Omega. They'll have their match, which Omega, I'm sure, will win. And then Cody can pick up the belt before we get to All In. There's still 2 months to go. And then on TV the other night, they handed it to Jay Lethal.
And everyone's like, what?
Now, giving it to Jay Lethal, I don't understand why you don't look at Marty Scurll for it, but Jay Lethal's someone, because he's held the title before, it almost maybe feels like you're saying he's someone who we can put it on just for a month or so and then have Cody pick it up, maybe. I think we've speculated about Dalton Castle's injuries continuing to be a problem. I genuinely think that this was a case of, oh, he can't continue to work. We've got to get the title off him, get it on someone who's basically, Jay Lethal is interim Ring of Honor champion, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. I haven't seen that yet because I've been, as well as eating ribs, I was also shooting hoops, which I actually didn't ever get one in. That's a private joke. So I didn't watch it, but I read all the results online, and people seemed like they were saying about Dalton Castle's injuries and that actually, like, it's becoming a problem now. Like, he was sort of, at the start, he was kind of just getting by and it was all right. He was maybe not doing some big moves, but now he just looks pained and he just looks kind of out of sorts as such. So I guess they just had to make that decision, didn't they, and just get it off him as quick as possible.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like what WWE should do with Brock, because, like, that title's forgotten. And
did you see Bischoff talking about that title this week? And
that's exactly what I was referring to, yeah.
He just doesn't get it.
No, I don't get it either. It's kind of like made that title, which was really exciting, and I was really excited about when Finn Balor won it, obviously, when it was the first champion. And now I'm just like, oh, okay. I forgot that happened.
And here's the thing. When they announced it, when you saw the belt for the first time, you're like, the Universal Championship, naff name. Red belt, naff belt. And then Finn Balor won it in that tournament, you're like, oh, some immediate credibility. And so then
they put it on someone that we didn't think they would, but we hoped they would, kind of thing.
It has been completely degraded. I mean, they have a ludicrous number of titles at this point. Across SmackDown, Raw, NXT, 205 Live, the UK Championship, the Women's Division. Like, there's so many titles out there that something, you know, they can't put every title on every pay-per-view. So don't put every title on every pay-per-view. But something like the Universal Championship should be, somebody, I think we talked about this before, but somebody made the Okada comparison that he only fought kind of 13 defenses in the space of a couple of years. Yes, but he was ever present. He was there at almost every single show. They just made the title matches something special. You can still do that with the Universal Championship. I don't mind if the Universal Championship is literally only defended on the big four and maybe a couple of other times a year, like a Hell in a Cell and then one other or something like that. I'm fine with that as long as there's a justifiable story basis for it. Brock's not here because we can't afford to pay him for more than 40 appearances a year is not a justifiable storyline.
It's like when a football team has like an appearance bonus based thing with a player, and suddenly they're in great form, but they just keep like leaving them on the bench so they don't play. It's mental. I just think it makes the title a joke, doesn't it? Really.
I want to apologise for the fact that you've watched Raw and SmackDown this week, because I don't really massively want to talk about them.
I say I've watched it. I skimmed through it on YouTube about 10 minutes before we called each other on Skype. Do you want to know my notes? I wrote notes on both. Notes on both. Won't take long. I wrote down. I think I take Baron Corbin a lot more seriously now he's cut that weird hair off.
I'm with you on that.
I also think he seems to talk better now he's got no hair. I think maybe it's because he has a more defined character as opposed to being the lone wolf.
Precisely.
Which I think was just like, hey, I'm a professional loner. Already mentioned Finn Balor's ass crack. A lot of people online have been talking about how they're protecting Drew McIntyre by putting him with Dolph Ziggler, which I think makes sense. I think they obviously must think very highly of him, and we know that Vince likes big guys, and you know he's obviously gone away and done the independents again and sort of proven that... improved a lot and sort of, you know, rounded his character a lot more. And I think that if they are looking for him for the future, then I guess it makes sense to have, like you've seen in this week, the old Revival came in and got involved. Also, hang on, sorry, I'm just blabbering. Would you like to see the Revival team up with McIntyre and Ziggler as like some kind of faction?
Factions are actually something which is really missing from WWE massively. I was thinking this the other day. If you look at what New Japan do, they've got LIJ, they've got obviously Bullet Club is absolutely huge, and those two are massively over. But even beyond that, they've got lots of other smaller factions as well. And I think a more structured faction system, something like that, I think you could see something. The problem is when WWE have done a faction well, you've managed to have something like The Shield, and it's been fantastic. When they've done it, you look at something like, I was going to say Legacy, that wasn't that brilliantly done, but like the Ric Flair, you know what I'm trying to say, Randy Orton, all of those guys.
You talking about Revolution? Is it Revolution? My mind's gone blank.
Yeah, I've lost the plot, so I'm just going to move on. When they do it well, it works. But then they also have things like the League of Nations, or Nexus works really well.
I like Nexus. Yeah, so the League of Nations.
They need to find a justification for it, and if they can do it well, they could make it work. So I don't think it's a bad shout. I think from that show,
Evolution.
Well done, sir.
Sorry.
The only thing I wanted to mention from that show was that I did think that. I did think that tag match was worth going back and checking out, the Rollins and Reigns against Drew McIntyre and Dolph Ziggler. Mm. It wasn't the best match that they've put on as a group, but McIntyre and Ziggler worked the tag beautifully, considering they've only recently become a team. What I will say, a 30-minute Iron Man match has been announced for Extreme Rules. That's only 2 minutes longer than they went for on Raw last week. Between Ziggler and Rollins. Give them a 60-minute Iron Man match, and they could put on... Honestly, I believe in those two performers so much. If you gave them the freedom, I think they could put on something at that Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels 60-minute Iron match level. I genuinely think you could have something that good. You could have a Stone Cold Classic on your hands. I think 30 minutes rushes it a bit when you talk about the finish, and I think it will end up botching things a bit, and you'll end up having... It'll go to extra time. It'll be a draw after 30 minutes, but no, not a fan. Not a fan at all.
All right, that's fair enough. I would like a fact. I think it would make the Revival have a bit of an identity rather than just being the whipping boys a little bit if they put them together. Other things that I quite liked, I still like the B team. I think that's quite funny. And that's it. SmackDown... Team Hell No. Now, I'm going to be honest, I missed all this the first time round because that was kind of when I was at uni and wrestling wasn't a thing because I was just playing Call of Duty with all my spare time. Is this good, Will? Is Team Hell No a good thing?
I'm enjoying it. Like, they need to... In case Daniel Bryan decides that he's going to move on at the end of his contract, I think that idea of Daniel Bryan and The Miz going all the way until WrestleMania will go out the window. I think that will be a SummerSlam match. So I think we'll get a big build to that over the next four or five weeks. It's a shame to give it away so quickly after you've had such a great build to it. But between the two of them, they could make some absolute must-watch TV over the next 8 weeks, 6 weeks, whatever it works out to be now. Basically, everything else there was meh. Jeff Hardy and The Miz was fine, but...
I've written down here, Jeff Hardy, you know how I always say how stiff he looks? It's the moment when he pulls himself up onto the turnbuckle to do a swanton bomb. He does it with such a sort of sense of resignment, and it's like, oh, here goes this again. And it's like an old man getting up out of his favourite chair that he sat in for years, knowing it's going to be a bit painful to go and like make a cup of tea.
That's when you say old man, you mean me?
No, I just generally just an older gentleman. I was interested to see that they did some intergender wrestling, which is a shock for WWE.
Yeah, Asuka and James Ellsworth doesn't count as intergender wrestling, so I'm sorry.
It was
I'm
just Kiss Chase, wasn't it?
I'm done.
Okay, fine.
In fact, I'm done with SmackDown in general. I'm gonna completely gloss over NXT and just say it was fine. It was not NXT's best. We've talked a lot about Gargano and the way they're going with that direction. I think that what was great about Gargano's match with EC3 was him using the DDT through the ropes that ended the match between him and Ciampa to knock off EC3, EC3's first television loss on NXT. Using that showed those flashes of... I mean, the Ciampa championship match against Aleister Black in 3 weeks. If you don't think Johnny Gargano's getting involved in that... I think
you don't know how wrestling works.
Yeah, Chris Dijak, I just wanted to say, he went up against Velvet Dream, continues to do some really good work. What I did want to talk about was 205 Live.
Yeah, you loved this week. I saw you tweeting your head off.
We haven't given a lot of love to 205 Live because I don't actually get to see it every week, but they tend to put on... The quality of the wrestling is great in 205 Live, and this week, more than any other, the main event between Buddy Murphy and Mustafa Ali in a no DQ match was absolutely superb. There were two guys, they were 1-1 in their feud, and they showed some really good chemistry kind of in the past, but...
Some chemistry. Some penistry.
It was incredibly violent, played to the stipulation amazingly. Their character work was excellent, like... Buddy Murphy is the like proper thirsty heel, willing to put Mustafa Ali in the not hospital, medical facility, as the WWE call it. Ali doing his proper babyface brand. He's flashy. It was honestly, that match is absolutely must see. I mean that it is must see.
I saw the highlights of this on YouTube that they put up, and it's really weird. With SmackDown and Raw, they always put like the finish, whereas on NXT, it's just like the middle of it, and that definitely made me want to watch it more, so I think I'll check that one out.
Honestly, go and watch it now when we're done.
Not NXT, sorry, 205 Live. I'm quite similar with that. It's sort of one of those ones where I watch it if I can, and sometimes I gloss over it, and I think that Triple H has done really well to move that off Raw and stop it being like a filler thing and make the brand a little bit more serious on its own show. Do we want to talk, before we hear from the guys from Pro Wrestling Eve, about World of Sport?
Yeah, I think we talk a bit about that in the interview with, chat with them, but World of Sport released their trailer this week for the first round of matches, and man, it looks really good. I almost hope that they haven't oversold themselves, because... What we didn't know was, I think we tried to contact them to go down to the tapings and do some interviews and stuff. And we didn't get turned away as such, but we basically just got a bit pied off. And we were like, it seems funny that they don't want any coverage of this. I think it's because they were trying to hide the fact that they've managed to get Joe Hendry, Will Ospreay, Kaylee Ray, Davey Boy Jr. and Stu Bennett hosting the whole thing, a.k.a. Wade Barrett. Honestly, they made it look absolutely epic. I just hope that the product lives up to the quality of this trailer, because actually, for all the talk we've had about WWE and the NXT UK brand, and for as good as that's going to be, we're talking about something that's going to be on prime time on a Saturday night. As far as I'm aware, that's still the plan. That reaches a whole different audience.
I do wonder how... what are those shows called, like, not It's a Knockout, that's too old, but like those kind of, you know, those kind of shows, and how that's presented, and there's sort of a jovial clapping audience and it's all very light-hearted. I do hope it's not like that. I don't think it will be, but I think when you think of prime time and ITV, you think, oh, it could be like that. There is a fella from Geordie Shore in it as well. I don't know if you've seen
Who's
that.
Who's the fella from Geordie Shore?
I think it's Geordie Shore. Adam Maxted. Like, he's legitimately trained as a wrestler now, and he's absolutely hench as F. So, like, I'm sure he's decent, but, like, it's interesting. Like, he came from sort of doing that reality TV, and now he's been on this. Now, I'm sure there's a reason, like, they've put someone like him on this, because I imagine his hundreds of thousands of young followers who'll watch anything he's in probably want to tune into this. But it'd be interesting to see if he can actually hold his own against, you know, like, people like Will Ospreay.
I've seen SoCal Val is co-commentating with old Stu Bennett.
I don't know a lot about SoCal Val. I see her on Twitter.
I was slightly surprised about that, but I think, one thing that did really catch my eye, and I will say, for everything, for all the kind of love and joy that I'm saying that this could be bringing, it did make me laugh that they've gone World of Sport exclusive Adam Maxted, World of Sport exclusive British Bulldog Junior, World of Sport exclusive Kaylee Ray, World of Sport exclusive, World of Sport exclusive, and then on the Will Ospreay announcement, it just says Will Ospreay.
Will Ospreay. Oh, no, I've looked at a tweet here. World of Sport exclusive, the Aerial Assassin Will Ospreay.
Oh, so they have got... Because I saw something...
Yeah, they went
had
back.
Exclusive
no,
on the pictures before, and they didn't have it on the Will Ospreay one. And I was like, why is that?
I mean, none of those are exclusive, really, are they?
I think exclusive, they mean not on NXT UK.
Yeah, well, obviously, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I guess they can't be. Well, look, you know what? I don't know when it starts. When does it start? Do we know?
So no, we don't. I don't think we've got that confirmed, have we?
All they're doing at the moment is the sort of ads on ITV that say, like, coming soon. This will be coming soon, and then suddenly they'll be like Saturday, and it's kind of really short notice. But yeah, we'll keep an eye out for that. I'm sure it'll be all right, and I'm sure we'll heavily review it when it happens.
Oh, massively, yeah. Massively.
Before we go into the interview, I want to mention, by the way, Urban Species, who do some amazing T-shirts. I really like their Hulk Hogan one. That they did, they kind of pushed it on Independence Day this week. I know when we met them last time, and by the way, you can see us in some of their T-shirts. You might have seen Will's got a, is it Matching Man? Yeah, you got a Matching Man one, which you wore at NXT at Download, which is really cool. They were talking about how they're sort of doing some new ones, and there's a new Becky Lynch one, which I really like. There's also a new Usos one, which is pretty cool. So check them out, and if you want to get a T-shirt, Mark's 10 gets you 10% off, which is nice, and you know, tweet us a picture at Pro Wrestle Show.
Beautiful stuff. Right, let's hear from the creators, promoters, and people behind the leading women's wrestling promotion in the UK, Pro Wrestling Eve. Here's Dan and Emily Reed joining us in the studio here on the Pro Wrestling Show.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Absolutely delighted to welcome into the studio now on the Pro Wrestling Show then, and it's a different kind of conversation, some of the ones we've had previously, but really, really pleased that we were able to, and kind of give you a bit of a background as to how this came about maybe as the interview goes on, but really delighted to say that the man and woman, the team behind EVE Pro Wrestling, Emily and Dan Reed have joined us in the studio. Thank you so much for coming in and joining us.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Appreciate you inviting us down.
Look, just to start off with, for people who aren't familiar with your products, what you guys do, just give us the blurb that you would give to somebody, the elevator pitch for what you guys do.
We're a feminist punk DIY women's wrestling company. So if you know about the Riot Girls, Riot Girl movement, we're basically the Riot Girls of wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, I asked for an elevator pitch and you sold it pretty perfectly.
It's the ECW, I would say. That might be something for anyone that's, you know, more long-term wrestling. Perhaps the ECW of women's professional wrestling is the wrestling pitch, I guess.
The wrestling pitch, Mick Foley, after seeing some footage of EVE, and then he actually looked up and watched a little documentary that was done of us, Pile Driver Fascist at school, and he actually put out a tweet saying how we reminded him of ECW.
He then did a whole Facebook post all about us as well, bless him.
It was really sweet.
He's one of the good guys, Mick, and that's amazing, and obviously gives you guys such great push. But talk to me a little bit about how this first came about what the kind of decision was behind starting and what has become an all-female pro wrestling company.
When we started, it was actually 8 years ago, and we were looking around and seeing this women's talent, but it was so obvious that they had the potential to reach the same high levels as the men. We could see other brilliant women's wrestling, especially in Japan, knowing that it's absolutely not a gender problem. The obvious problem to myself and Dan, especially as a wrestling promoter, your talent can't improve if they don't have the platform and opportunities to improve. And women were being given the same 5-minute spot on the show, normally in the rest match, shall we say, where people could just nip to the loo and nip to the bar. And they were put against probably the same local talent that was cheap to get in. They didn't have the chance to learn and progress and grow as performers, and we wanted to just make this little safe oasis and this area that provided that platform for them. And
I'd been promoting already since 2002, and you know, it was a case of there weren't many women around at the time, but and we started promoting women's shows with an American company actually in 2006, because there was you were starting to see a number of women, you know, just, you know, work as hard as they could, but they just weren't given the opportunities to, you know, perform and improve. And they're also having to work, you know, 10 times as hard to be thought of as half as good. It certainly wasn't an even platform. There certainly wasn't the number of talents that there are available, you know, on the scene, you know, today. So it really was just a case of, right, you know, in order to, you know, get the performers to be able to learn how to perform like a main event, like a co-main event, like an opener, like a match going into the interval, all different matches on different parts of the show have different structures and have different purposes. And, you know, matches with long-term storylines will have a different structure to matches that are just sent out there as part of the evening show. So by, you know, starting to run women's wrestling promotions, promotion events, that meant that we were able to, you know, help the talent learn different match structures, different psychologies. And we also began bringing in talents from outside of the UK who, you know, were already further progressing than what the talents in the UK were, because the scene was massively behind.
The scene was massively behind in terms of women's wrestling, but actually the UK indie scene at that same period, I think a lot of people would say it was not to the level it is now, where it's almost a flooded market of the number of promotions that we've got. And yes, you could, we'll talk about the WWE and their role coming up, both in women's wrestling and in the kind of independent scene as it is. But, you know, even if you speak to guys who are running the top promotions and women who are running the top promotions, they will tell you that 6-7 years ago, if they were getting 300 people in, they were pleased. Now they can sell out 700, 800, go to bigger venues. So what were the challenges just in promoting at the time anyway, but then having to go out there and sell this image of, we're going to do this, but we're going to make it about the women?
for me, Dan's job. And when I started working more as a promoter, I started as a showrunner. It's the best way to learn the business, and I think it's extremely important to start that way. But when we did a show, all women's show, but we ran it like a wrestling show, so I didn't see the biggest thing we had to prove to start with. We did Kids Come Free on the posters because we wanted to make sure everybody knew that it was not a sexual product. So Dan can go into more details of the history.
Yeah, that's the biggest misconception. Like when we were trying to get the, you know, any kind of publicity, everybody was just instantly putting the phone down on Emily whenever she was calling. We had venues cancel on us because it was a women's wrestling show, and they just immediately assumed that meant.
I had on multiple occasions, like old women open their doors and come chase me with the flyer that I just put through their door, saying like, I don't want any of that smut through my door. They chase me up the street, and I was standing there thinking, well, just pop it in the bin. But they thought it was such filth that they did not want it in their house. And obviously just the standard being turned away from shops that put up posters for a different wrestling event, but they were like, oh no, it will upset our customers if they see that.
Yeah, it was the wrestling business, like I say, I've been promoting for 16 years and I've been in a business for 18 years, and I've seen it go through, you know, the peaks and the troughs. I was probably one of the last people to come in and the dying phase of an old school era. And, you know, I remember I was one of the people that was involved in the Universal Uproar show at the Coventry Sky Dome, which was, you know, had 2,500 people there. And the show was fantastic. We had talents from all over the world, you know, competing on that. But there was very few British talents because you're right, the scene in the UK was still developing. But the same could be said for the scene in the US at the time. You didn't have the quality of the independent wrestling scene over there like you did here. And there was also, at the time, a resistance to the old school ways of British wrestling. And by old school ways, I really mean the old school professional wrestling style, the World of Sport style. It was the UK scene was very much trying to mimic what Ring of Honor was at the time. Ring of Honor at the time was trying to mimic what Japan was at the time, and Japan wasn't at its best period during that period of time neither. So you had lots of promotions, lots of countries trying to mimic what other people were doing when neither were doing their best. And really the UK scene kind of like found its footing when it started rediscovering World of Sport, and when it started, when you had more performers starting to go and learn from, you know, Johnny Saint and, you know, Robbie Brookside. You know, it was that's when I don't think it's a coincidence then that you look at who the majority of the people that the Performance Center in WWE are, those same talents that people started going into learn with. I mean, if you Marty Scurll is a prime example right now of someone that is doing things that's getting over that 15 years ago we're all like, you can't do that. That's stuff that you do on the campsites, that's the camp shows, that's the stuff that you do, you know, for kids, like the finger breaking spot. 15-20 years ago, well, not maybe not quite that, but certainly around 15 years ago, you know, like everyone was just like, you can't do that spot because everyone can see right through it. Now Marty Scurll does that finger breaking spot and everyone loses their mind for it. So there's a change in attitude as well of the audience, as well as, you know, as well as the progression of the wrestling scene over here.
So, I mean, that's a general look at the progression of the wrestling scene, but specifically when it comes to what you were looking to promote, you talked about how those who didn't know wrestling thought that you were putting on some kind of smut show, but
even those that knew
about
wrestling.
Well, this is it. So what about those who do know wrestling? What about...
Well, they were heavily influenced by what they were seeing on WWE TV. And there was a small, you know, number of people that had seen, you know, Volcano Girls, which was the IWA Mid-South's women's wrestling event that, alerted a few more people in the West. And there was more people that was more so aware of the glory days of the Japanese women's wrestling scene, All Japan Women and the Dream Slam events. But you're already preaching to the converted there. At the end of the day, the majority of people are being influenced by what they see on the commercial, you know, front, which is WWE. And the WWE women's division, you know, was horrific, for the most part, in terms of the presentation during that period. And it took a very long time for people to get out of the Attitude Era's presentation of women's professional wrestling, because it wasn't women's professional wrestling, really. It was women performers doing stunts, but they certainly weren't being given an equal platform to performers wrestlers. You know, we all know, you know, what their job was during that period of time. And it's really through the hard work of the number of women there at the time that they're able to produce, you know, a certain quality and certain standard of matches and make people care as time went on, because they were passionate and dedicated for it. But the presentation was the problem. And so we were just, it was just a lot of hard work. It was just, you're just constantly fighting that stigma. So you're fighting the stigma that women's wrestling can't be good, which we're still fighting. You know, that's one of the biggest lies in the business right now, but we'll come on to that a bit later, I'm sure. You know, but you're during that period of time, they didn't have anything in front of their eyes that they could say that women's wrestling is fantastic and to judge it by. So you literally had everyone against you. Even the people in the business were against us doing it. We still are.
So when you're working with talent, because this is kind of what intrigues me, you mentioned it yourself, and you see it across... Even if the amount of booking still isn't good enough on shows like ICW Progress, who are trying to advance things on the indie scene but still don't have enough women's wrestling, the quality of the talent and the number of talent clearly has risen over the last 6 or 7 years, and I'm sure you guys are something to do with that. But how do you, when you've got a small pool of talent, how did you finding new wrestlers, finding women who wanted to get involved and where their inspiration could come from to get involved, when their example at that time was, you know, you maybe had someone like Lita who was meant to be taken seriously within that era, but beyond that, you've got the rest of the talent weren't being treated as if they were wrestlers, they were just being treated as almost a sideshow.
When you have a passion for wrestling and you want to be a wrestler, you want to be a wrestler, and as a woman, I would love a strong female role model, and it's totally where you're like, oh, China's amazing, I want to be like that, or something like that. But when the options aren't there, and if people just look up a picture of what I look like, one of the only women that I liked was Trish Stratus. I loved how she progressed and clearly worked so hard. But I don't have that tan. I don't have a delicate nose, shall we say. I don't have big fake breasts and had no desire to get them. So I knew I couldn't be like that. But when you love wrestling, I would watch it and be... when I started training, I was actually talking to Dan about it earlier. I went into training saying, I want to be Doug Williams. So thinking that women will come in and saying, like, I'm going to be Lita, I'm going to be this, is actually just as common for people to come in saying, I want to be Jeff Hardy, I want to be like Triple H, I'm going to be the next Stone Cold. And it's actually, they will just go to the wrestling that they fell in love with if they're not being provided it. It's just much nicer and so refreshing, and it feels so empowering when you see a woman doing it.
Especially when you see the young girls. So that was the biggest thing that we found, is when you were...
That was the wonderful thing about us pushing Eve as just a normal family wrestling show at the beginning, when we first started it, is that we just pushed it and pushed it and pushed it. And almost in the press, there would be all women on the poster. It was very, very clearly say all women's wrestling show. But it was also very clearly marketed as a family wrestling show. And it would be great because you get the kind of tired mum bringing her sons along. And then the next time she'd have her son and her daughters there with her. And the next time she'd have some of her friends, some of the other mums come along with their kids, because they're suddenly realising, oh, this is a wrestling show, but my daughter's seeing this woman who's got a figure like me and this other woman who's super athletic and this tall woman and this. And they're seeing them and they're all strong and they're heroes and they're not sexualised. And that is something you want to show your sons and your daughters. And that is something that's amazing to see when you see these little kids and their faces light up because they realize they can be a hero. And maybe the little boy's looking and thinking, maybe I should respect my sister or my mum just a little bit.
that sounds like a wonderful world. I hope that is something that we are creating. But
we had the same thing at the Women of the World Festival, which we did at the South Bank Centre recently, where it was free event, part of the Women of the World Festival. And, you know, we had a number of people Instagram us and tweet us, you know, that they came and they watched with their daughters, and then they went home and they'd send us pictures of their daughters, like, you know, suddenly dressing up to be wrestlers like they've just seen.
Little outfits and had wrestling names.
So it's, you know, there is certainly, you know, more of a direct link, you know, between, you know, young girls, you know, seeing, you know, women portrayed as heroes, you know, in front of them.
And also very much a link to women, actually, of any age, when we're surrounded by very strong media images of what we should look like, and we're still very much told to be quiet and timid. And if we speak out about something we're proud of, then we're bragging and we're arrogant. And if we talk passionately to someone, we're super angry. And why are we being so emotional? And if we are directing people, then we're being bossy. We're not showing authority. And for women to see, again, it is important, women of all different shapes and sizes, when they're playing characters that are them, nothing to do with their looks, nothing to do with their sexuality, and seeing them just be powerful and loud and command the space, command the attention of an audience, it's very moving, and it means a lot to women because we don't see that.
In terms of where the talent came from, they contacted us when the women saw that there was an even playing field. Like, we were inundated, and we still are, you know, to this day. You know, the number of women performers that we get messages saying, like, Eve is the new Japan, it's where everyone wants to go, is just ridiculous. And
messages, you know, from Japan.
Messages from
people
Japan.
People saying, like, where we want to go is, yeah, is Eve, can we come over to Eve?
We had the promoter from RWC in Spain, RCW, sorry, in Spain contact us saying, all anyone's going on about over here is Eve. You know, because when you are providing that platform, you know, I'm sure anyone is just looking for a platform to be able to further show themselves and what they could do and further learn. And that's basically what it was in terms of where the talent was coming from. But what we were doing when we first started is, you know, to help those talent along, because the scene was behind. We was bringing in, like, cheerleader Melissa. We was bringing in Mischief. We was, you know, and then we, as Eve further got along, we, you know, obviously when we came back, we started bringing in, like, we brought in Manami Toyota. We brought in
Ice Ribbon.
We brought Ice Ribbon in. We were the first promotion to ever bring in a Japanese women's, you know, wrestling promotion.
Then what we started a program where we started sending some of our talent, like Kaylee Ray and Nikki Cross, we would send them
to Japan
so that they could go and learn there and develop and progress as performers as well.
We just had Sammy Jane just come back from a tour that we sent her on, and the whole thing, you know, like, we pay the flights, we organise the trip so that they've got somewhere that they can train and also shows that they can wrestle on over there. The first two, which was Nikki and Kaylee, they went to JWP. Sammy Jane just returned from Sendai Girls, which is Meiko Satomura's promotion, who we work very closely with, and we've got somebody else going over later this year as well, you know. And that's, again, that's part of our commitment to, you know, further in the scene, as we have continually ploughed, you know, money that's come in straight back into the talent to, you know, further it.
So from when the first kernel of the idea came through and you first started to promote to where you are now, where you can be putting on, you know, big events at places like York Hall, legendary kind of wrestling occasions, selling them out. I think I was reading online you've sold out, you know, a ridiculous number of shows in a row, which, you know, a lot of people can't claim to have done. Was there a moment where it was clearly catching fire, where to you went, this is something that people really want? Was that from the off, or was there a struggle initially that kind of led to a moment where you thought, no, actually, we've got something here which is not just going to be a lovely idea that we want to embrace and want to push, but actually is something that is going to catch on with the mainstream, and wrestling fans who may not have respected women's wrestling 10 years ago are actually going to start giving it some real proper attention?
To be honest, they're still not. It's all a lie. Like, I know it sounds ridiculous, but it is. Like, the amount of people, like, yeah, I'm a massive fan of women's wrestling. I love the match that I see at the show that I go to, the one match, if they're lucky. I think when Emily and I were talking to you over Twitter, you know, I think, did you mention the stats? Sorry.
Yes, I did.
Right. So, you know, like, you look at those stats, like, over that weekend was mentioned, there was 33 shows in the UK, 17 of them didn't feature any women's matches. You know, so it's a good narrative to have, because the you know, things are better, but just because things are, you know, better doesn't mean that things are good. And I think that's where things get, you know, confused. The reason why Eve sells out as much as it does isn't actually because of wrestling fans. It's because Eve has become the cool event to go to. You know, the quality of the wrestling that we have is world class. But there is still that resistance from wrestling fans to go to an all-women's wrestling show. And there is also, you're still dealing with a lot of people that make this assumption that because the Japanese women's wrestling scene is the best in the world. Clearly, they don't actually watch the Japanese wrestling scene, or they don't watch much of anything else. And they don't obviously speak to any of the wrestlers in Japan, because they'll tell you that it's not as straightforward as that. You aren't suddenly born in a country and that suddenly makes you the best wrestler in the world by default. You know, it doesn't work as that. And we're very quick to talk about how great the men's scene is over here, but yet there seems to be this resistance to talking about the overall, you know, scale. And sometimes... and I know I'm going on here a little bit, but sometimes
I know
it's because a lot of people are scared to say to, you know, female talent, you know, what level they're actually at. Emily was actually tweeting about this earlier, okay. You know, because there's this immediate assumption where girls are being put into high profile positions on high profile shows that they're actually not, you know, they shouldn't, those specific girls shouldn't be on. Instead, it should be these other girls, but these other girls cost more money.
Well, you know what? It is the same thing it has always been. And I am just going to say, if you're a pretty girl, that means you're going to get booked. If you're pretty and local, wow, even better. But if you're very new to wrestling and very green still, but you're pretty and then you get yourself some decent gear, you're booked and you'll be booking in positions that you're not ready for. And then quite often, because of how you look, and because I think men almost as well have been trained that you're not to try and upset women and you've got to be nice to women, will tell them, oh, wow, no, you're great, you're so fantastic. But then just imagine being that person, you're on Twitter and you're like, oh, I just don't like women's wrestling. But you know what? I will give it a chance. And they scroll through and they're like, oh, everyone's saying how great this woman is. They're always telling us she's great. Looks amazing. She's in shape. Looks like an athlete. I'll check out this match that she had. And it's this 5-minute thing with two women in there.
Or even 10 minutes.
Oh, God.
If it's people that aren't.
That's almost worse. But they're people who, they're so green. They're not there yet. It doesn't mean that they're not going to. They are. And there are so many women out there in the moment who are going to be absolute stars. But they're not yet. And when you are saying that, one, it damages the scene, because that person that's gone and watched that is going to say, well, that's the top level of women's wrestling.
Yeah, because it's on a top high-profile show.
Yeah, that's what we got. And they're going to say it's awful.
What I'd like to hope, and this is as a pure Mark wrestling fan perspective, is that what we've seen in the development of the scene, and actually as wrestling fans have become smarter across the board, is that I would hope is that actually a lot of wrestling fans would be able to discern. They'd be able to say, of course you can have someone who's booked strong, who's pushed in the right way, who is, you know, made to look strong, but actually if they get in the ring and they don't perform, you will get people, and like you're saying, that can damage the women's scene if it's in front of a crowd that isn't embracing women's wrestling necessarily. But actually I want to hope that that would also mean that when there is somebody who is going out there and showing that they have got what it takes and they are at the right level, that the fans will embrace that individual, surely.
The person, say they're doing the thing, like I said, and they're looking around like, well, who's the top one? Say they watch Kaylee and Mako from Wrestle Queendom. They'll be like, this is amazing. I was wrong. Women's wrestling is phenomenal. Look at that. Now, say they... And so, yes, I do think there's a chance for that, and they will agree, but I don't think there's a chance. I would love for those fans to change, the ones who tell the girls because they think they're nice people that they're really great, but I don't think they will. And those fans who don't think women's wrestling is great, they have to see something of high quality or they're not going to embrace it. And why should they? They shouldn't be saying something subpar is good. But you give your thoughts.
Yeah, I think the thing is there's no precedent yet to, you know, really say that things will change on the basis of, if you're passionately supporting a promotion because they do deliver the best male wrestlers in the world, and then they provide you with female talent, and some of those talent are on, you know, repeat bookings, regardless of the quality, then the chances are that that's the level that majority of that audience thinks that women's wrestling is when it's at its best.
Because the men's matches are all at their best, yeah. So the women's follow suit, it would be natural to assume that that's the top women's talent.
But there isn't an equal platform being given. You know, they aren't investing into the women's scene like they are into the men's scene. And that's the telling fact of it all. And the thing is, I think any person, if you're a wrestling fan and you're listening to us talk right now and you're, you know, thinking of one of those many wrestling promotions that you are a hardcore fan of, and you're thinking of a women's match, probably just the one that you saw in there, and it wasn't very good, then that's kind of telling as it is, because the fact is there is world-class professional wrestling being conducted by women out there, and they are, a number of them are in this country. So then you've got to ask yourself, you know, why is it that I'm not getting that? And then you could say, well, maybe they were booked elsewhere. Well, again, you know, using the, you know, the facts that we, you know, mentioned when there was the conversation between the pair of you, you know, that weekend that we spoke about, you know, where there was 579 jobs given to wrestlers, only 59 of those jobs went to women. Now, you know, that's not a, you know, I'm not expecting it to suddenly be like an even playing field. I'm not expecting half of that, but that is a small amount of, you know, jobs that are going to women. So there's a good chance, actually, that one of those fantastic women wrestlers actually were available. Two, four, who knows? There's a whole bunch of amazing talent in this country.
It's always nice to look at where they live.
You know.
If you like, why aren't we getting that talent on this London show? We appear to have got these two wrestlers who live reasonably close.
Yeah, there's just this false narrative, because it's nice to believe. It's nice to believe that the wrestling scene is what it is, but it's and the thing is, I know it makes us sound bitter because everybody else is saying this, but it's not just bitter, because, you know, just watch a show and then tell us if we're wrong.
There are kind of two other areas I really want to get into, and I want to talk about the WWE, both as its televised US product and the so-called women's revolution, but also what's happening with the UK at the moment. Just before that, just to get a view on your thoughts on intergender wrestling, because that's another thing which is obviously catches fire whenever, you know, you see Jimmy Havoc powerbombing Ginny on a table, and suddenly a bunch of people go, well, no, you can't be doing that, and they come out with these claims about domestic violence and everything else. Now, we've had Jimmy on the show talking about that very incident and talking about, you know, protection and how safe it is, and actually how you're treating wrestling differently because there's a woman in the ring is a real problem. But do you think that it is something which is a real positive for the scene here when there are some people who it will turn them away from it?
It's if you feel uncomfortable with it, then don't watch it. It's a performance. It's an act. There's no reason why they can't. You know, the key word, and people, it's just very logical when you think about it. The key word is consent. Both of those people have knowingly and happily stepped into the ring to perform for the audience together. They're performing. That's what they're doing. They protect each other like they do with everything. It is consensual. So what's the issue?
Yeah, would you get upset if for a male and a female stunt person, you know, doing a scene together on a movie that involves both of them getting hurt? Because one of the biggest lies in stunt work is that nobody gets hurt. Nobody gets pain. Wrestlers are stunt persons. That's what wrestlers are. And you know, if you're not going to get angry over, you know, stunt women and stunt men working a scene together, then you have no right to be, you know, getting angry. The only thing that I can, you know, conclude is that people are like, ah, but it looks like that this is domestic abuse. Well, okay, then then how far do you take it? Because then do you then stop it on EastEnders? Do you stop it on Hollywood films? Because wrestling, I don't know why it is, but there's this thing that the, you know, most people have that aren't wrestling fans, where they go, wrestling's fake, it's not real. And then they're not happy at the same time and not believing you when you're saying, no, it's a performance. Yeah, of course it's not real. Don't be daft. And then they're just like, whoa. Well, but you can't allow that on show, and you can't have that on TV. It's like, your kids watch Power Rangers? Do you see the Yellow Ranger get beat up, you know, and then come back and win? You know, come on.
And I think that's what amazes me about that conversation is when it's wrestling fans doing that, who supposedly are smart people who, you know, if you understand...
Well, they're the ones, it has to be real to them.
The reason I use that incident is, A, because it really caught fire online at the time, but actually also because Ginny trained with Jimmy. That's where she got her kind of early experience from. So the level of trust between two performers when you've worked with each other week in, week out, to be able to protect each other, to look after each other, when you are doing those kind of big spots at somewhere that they were doing at Riptide, you're going, well, if you know wrestling, you know that those people have invested a huge amount of time in getting to a point where they feel safe in what they're doing and they believe in the performance. So why are you suddenly...
Also got like Cara Noir versus Rhea O'Reilly.
Yeah, we do these shows called Equal Fights, which is because we also run another promotion called XWA. I did in the past, and it's basically XWA versus Eve, you know? And it's like four of the matches on every show are men versus women, but there's no, you know what I mean, Cara Noir versus Rhea O'Reilly is probably
never worked each other before.
Yeah, one of the sickest matches you'll ever see. Eva Luna, who's one of the Super Smash Brothers, teamed up with Jimmy Havoc on the last Equal Fight show against Addie Starr and Rhea O'Reilly. One of the moves involved a jumping pile driver onto Lego. You know, like,
brutal.
You know, sounds comedic, but also, you ever stood on Lego?
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, you know, a jumping pole.
I wasn't laughing because that spot sounds funny. It sounds brutal.
Yeah, and here's the thing, like, Eva Luno and Rhea O'Reilly had never met before. But, and this is where there's responsibility on the promoters, you know, if you're booking people in any match, regardless of gender, as a promoter, you should be thinking about the safety of those performers and only booking safe performers. So that any performer can go onto any show and feel safe in the knowledge of who it is that they're being programmed to perform with that evening.
Right, so to the WWE issue, and we'll talk about WWE UK and UK NXT and their new women's division, etc., shortly. But firstly, on the women's revolution side of things, the four horsewomen, the calling the talent up from NXT, then there's no doubt that for some people it will have opened their eyes to what the quality of women's wrestling can be. When you see Sasha Banks against Bayley in NXT, when you see the quality of the program that Charlotte and Sasha Banks ran on the main roster, they were having genuinely top-level wrestling matches, and I'm not saying that's not something that we should expect from women, but there will be a huge swathe of the WWE universe, whatever they want to call them, that won't necessarily expect that, who will have that Attitude Era image. Have you seen, from what's happened there, a knock-on effect to how people approach women's wrestling on an independent level?
Glow, I saw a knock-on effect, but that still wasn't on the independent wrestling level. That was actually just getting women,
casual,
like, oh, that looks kick-ass, and oh, look, that show has women. Let's go watch that.
That's
so
coming back to what we were saying earlier about the, Eve hasn't and. You know, Eve doesn't sell out on the basis of wrestling fans. Eve sells out because, you know, it's the cool night to go to. And a lot of that came because Glow came out and Kate Nash started attending our shows and has now become a good mate of ours. And it's a case of, so she's always, you know, promoting Eve events whenever she's doing media work about Glow. And it's a case of those fans were coming, those people were coming to Eve and then they were becoming fans because of the quality of the show that they were seeing. And that's what it is. In terms of the quality of the women's wrestling, there's definitely been an improvement. I think it's a shame that we're not seeing the same quality on the main roster as what we see on NXT, but I understand at the same time that it's not as straightforward.
And there's a wider booking argument. That's not just the women's, it's
also
the men's.
There's a time consensus as well.
But equally, I was in New Orleans at WrestleMania this year, and after the show, we went on the streets and we spoke to people about, you know, we did the kind of vox pops and videos about, you know, what was match of the night, stuff like that. And hands down, the only two matches we heard were about Charlotte and Asuka and about the Rousey mixed gender tag match. Those were the only two that people cited, which, when you've got the return of Daniel Bryan and AJ Shinsuke and other matches which might not have lived up to people's high bar expectations, but those were the ones that the fans in the stadium were citing. And when you've got 100,000 people saying that as a majority, then you know that there is something there that people are at least recognising that they can be at the same level.
I still think the Hell in a Cell match between Charlotte and Sasha, which kind of crashed and burned as a main event, when it comes to women's wrestling, people are still conditioned to think of the worst first. and cite that as a reason why it can't go further. So when it comes to like the Charlotte and Asuka match and the mixed tag, you know, it is I found that whenever there's a women's match that steals a show on a more commercial platform, people talk about it with surprise. Like, yeah, because that was really good, actually. Like,
yeah,
I weren't expecting that.
Yeah.
Like, and there's also this lower bar that they almost, you know, hold it to, which damages the platform. You should not hold, you know, the women to a lower platform than the men. You should hold good wrestling at a set bar, regardless of the gender. I can't, you know, there's certainly been an improvement in terms of the quality, but, you know, I'm going to sound terrible here because I used to know one of these individuals, but I watched that Becky Lynch versus Peyton Royce match from SmackDown last night, and that was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's kind of like heartbreaking when you see that. And at the same time, you know, on the roster, you know, in like development, you've got someone like Nikki Cross. And okay, I'll put my hand up. I've got a bias there. She's, you know, a 3-time Eve champ, someone that we've worked with, you know, a lot. But she's a phenomenal talent. You know that there's Kairi Sane. You know that Asuka's on the main roster and Charlotte's on the main roster. And you know that there's good talent there. But you also, as Emily was saying too, there is still and not to take away from the hard work of any of the people there, because they obviously, in order to be on that platform, they have to work so hard, harder than I think people realize, you know. But there is a lot of great talent that's being, you know, ignored. And there is, you know, sometimes poor being presented as good, and sometimes, you know, average being presented as great. Sometimes good lives up to the hype, but there's not as much of a opportunity, especially when you try to make out like you're, you know, you try to stack something out. What you'll find a lot of promotions, and WWE is a good example, because they'll copy us, they'll make out like their women's roster is far more deeper than it is, and then you'll realize that there's like two matches. One will be a singles and the other will be a, you know, multi-person match.
Yeah, of course.
And, you know, that's the go-to argument. It's like, well, we've got lots of women on our roster. And then you actually look at what the use of that is. And WWE's not the only one that's guilty of that. There are high-profile independent companies over here that do the exact same thing.
And that's a kind of where you come to the crux. I do still find it bizarre that we have this approach to, this is something nothing to do with women's wrestling, just wrestling in general. When you say independent wrestling, what you actually are saying is not WWE. Because people call New Japan independent, people call Ring of Honor independent. Those are huge companies that draw in people to massive arenas.
I wouldn't refer to Ring of Honor and New Japan personally, but you're right, most people do.
A lot of people do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That is the common...
It's kind of, that's kind of a totally separate argument and conversation. But so with the development of the brand over here and the announcement that we're getting these monthly TV tapings and what is intended to be a weekly TV show, depending on how that pans out, whether it's network, whether it goes on Sky, however that works, and as part of that being a women's division, when we sat down and we did 3 or 4 times over the weekend as the announcements were being made with Triple H and in a press conference situation, you know, never at any point did they mention gender until it became about we're bringing in a women's division. But it was all about developing talent, working with brands that develop talent, working with brands that work on storylines. They don't just book and put a match on. No, they kept pushing that same angle. And when I asked about the women's wrestling, and I kind of became the women's wrestling guy over that weekend unintentionally. Yeah, when you're only allowed to ask one question and it gets around to me and 4 people have gone, I'm like, no one's asked about women's wrestling, so I'm going to do it. When I came and I asked the statistic, firstly, they mocked me a bit for coming out with statistics, but actually when I kind of pushed Triple H on it, I said, well, what are you going to do to make sure that this talent that you're putting in the ring, these 6, 7, 8 women who you're initially announcing, are actually, if they're not going to be able to work with every promotion in the country, are getting enough work in the ring to develop and grow as performers, kind of said, well, I'm going to ask the people we're working with to put more matches on, to put more women's matches on, and he gave me this kind of spiel about it takes a time to change a culture and all that sort of thing. Should there be a different approach to the way they look at the women's wrestling side of this WWE UK brand, considering there is less opportunity for women's wrestlers, as we've seen from those statistics?
I have quickly just 2 things. One is, I think if Triple H came up to most promoters and said, hey, I want you to put on more than one women's match, I think that promoter would. I don't think that's actually going to take a lot to change a culture. He'd come up and be like, put on three women's matches a show, and they'd be like, yeah, okay, yeah. No,
make,
I can.
Yeah. Make half your show women's, you know.
And they would do it, of course.
They'd just be thinking of that sweet, sweet money, or the fact that they get to take a selfie.
Or the fact that this Triple H is going to be one of the two, or both.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. That's what you want to do. The other one...
At the same time, I think there is... They kind of partially joking about that, partially it's absolutely true, but at the same time, what people don't realise with these higher-end independent promotions that are so-called in the UK that are working with WWE is actually those guys that are the bookers, the agents, everything else, are actually working NXT shows, are actually working backstage, learning from what they do, etc. It's a much more symbiotic relationship, I think, in the UK than people give it respect for. So I think that there would be more of a conversation about it than just, yes, sir, no, sir. But I think at the end of the day, the bottom line would be, well, we've got to do what they ask us to do.
I think it would be put on, we need you to put on three women's wrestling matches on your show. And I think they'd say, yeah, well, you know, we have to make sure that we've got room for this. And they might discuss that. But I don't think at any point they're going to say no, an outright no. It just wouldn't happen.
I want to be fair to because I think there are.
Yeah, we're not
attacking
them.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. I don't want to just say they're doing the wrong thing blanketly at the moment. There needs to be more opportunity for women's wrestlers. I absolutely believe that, and that's, you know.
Yeah, no, well, it's a case
why
of,
I want to have this conversation.
Well, no, my one is just I don't make excuses.
Yeah.
When they say like, oh well, we're trying, I say, well, you don't need to try. You need to do it.
Mm.
It's not actually difficult. When there were no women's wrestling companies in this country, we made one. Wasn't, you know, we did it. We didn't say, oh, well, there should be a platform for women and they really need the chances. We made it and we did it. So if you're saying like, oh, well, you know, we'd like and we're trying to develop the women's scene in our company, do it. Just do it. Stop talking about it and do it. Or you are full of poo.
I have the ability to beat this out. It's pre-recorded, so...
I went with poo.
That's fine. I appreciated the self-censorship. It was lovely.
And then the other one is just, for me, I look at the number of people on the roster, and I don't know, I always think simply it's very difficult to have a detailed storyline, even if just going for the championship, even if that's your one storyline around the championship, if you've not got many women to develop the storyline with. But Dan, I interrupted when you started talking.
You're spot on.
Yeah.
Well, Emily's absolutely right. First of all, just do it. We did it. You just can do it. And any time, I don't believe the argument of things, you know, take time, takes a lot flipping longer if you're not going to do something.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? If you're not going to just jump in. UFC is the best example. You know, like, they dove both foot in. For how long? Dana White was saying, you'll never see any women in the UFC. You'll never see any women in the UFC. And then when they, okay, it took Ronda Rousey, okay, but then it was Ronda Rousey and Liz Carmouche. And that wasn't just, like, just giving a little spot on the show. It was the main event. The first ever women's fight in UFC was the main event, and they made it a big deal. And that's the thing, you make it a big deal. And then they grew the scene, and then you had a Tough that was, you know, an all-female cast, you know. It's you can change it if you just go ahead and do it.
It's hard work, but
yeah.
Then you know what, being a wrestling promoter is hard work.
Yeah, so it's okay, and there's no other excuse. People are just, you know, well, for the independent promoters, they're scared that they're going to lose some of their audience. So they don't want to, but they'll tell you that they're doing their bit, you know, but they're really just scared that they'll lose their audience if they were to put on more women's matches. Their choice of talent, again, lack of investment for the most part, because they're paying so much for, you know, the high quality, you know, male talent. Or maybe it's not that. Maybe for some it certainly will. Maybe for some others it's because they've got a certain look that they want to go for, or whatever reason. But there certainly isn't the level of investment. In terms of working places, you know, I think it's, you're right to ask the question that you asked, which is, if you're going to limit the bookings of people that are already, you know, 92% less likely to get a booking, you know, than their male counterparts. That's not really furthering the scene. And it's one thing to say, well, we'll ask the promotions that we're working with to put on more women's matches. But what about the women that are on that show? You know, they can work that show, right? But they can't work OTT, you know, Rev Pro. Or another promotion. You know, OTT have just started doing these, they've just started getting into doing all women's shows as well, bless them.
I think kind of the way I sit on it when it comes to that conversation is actually from the if you go for the men's side of the argument, I think some have been unfair with, I think when it comes to the men's side of it, and David Starr's coming on the show next week, I'm going to ask him about the way he stood on it, because he had a really nice diatribe on Twitter. For a men's scene, if you are taking people out from certain promotions and only having them work in four or five promotions, and those are the ones, what you're doing is creating opportunity for young talent to come up and fill those spots, and it's happened before, and it can happen again, but that's because there are, like you say, a lot of opportunities there. I don't think you can make the same argument with the women's wrestling, because actually, my concern is that if you say to them, you can only work on these three, four promotions, that they're going to do one actual in-ring match a month in front of a crowd. And as much as you can work in a gym and in training and you know, learn and develop as much as you want in that, until it's in front of an environment to figure out what works and what doesn't. It's like stand-up comedy. You don't know what's funny in front of a mirror. You know what's funny when you do it in front of an audience.
And also, many audiences are different, and if you limit the different audiences that you get a chance to work in front of, like, you know the difference between, I'll use WWE as an example here, between when WWE run a show in New York and when they run it in, I don't know,
Chicago,
Chicago, New York, those kind of, you know, New Jersey, those kind of places, but then they run it in, I don't know, some place.
Chattanooga.
Do you know what I mean? Or maybe, I don't know, I can't even, but you know the type of audience.
I didn't believe that was a real place until I saw them.
Until 10, yeah.
Events there, yeah.
You know, but like, you know the difference between when they're working that kind of an audience to when they're working, you know, and, you know, I'm sure on the house shows, even if they can't change things up a little bit, on the TV side, for a long, long while, when they go to Japan, in fact, they've just been to Japan, they change things up a little bit. When they used to go to Japan, they would have, they would change the matches up. So you would get your Jericho versus Benoit as an example, because they knew the Japanese audience, you know, knew that. I don't know how much of things necessarily changed, but obviously they still made a point that, you know, Shinsuke was going to be in matches with people like, was it AJ? Mm-hmm. And when Shinsuke couldn't work it, they switched it with Samoa Joe. They didn't switch it with The Miz, who, by the way, I think is flipping awesome.
Thank you. It's an absolute prerequisite for coming on this show to love The Miz.
Oh, because, The Miz is fantastic. Yeah. He's generally one of my favourites. But they deliberately put him in with someone of that certain style that kind of matches what that Japanese fans are on. I think when you, limit the audiences, you know, I think that damages. I know there's a concern amongst their performers being seen on 18-plus promotions. You know, you must behave in this way, which I think is fine to say, like, because you're now a part of us, we need you to perform in a certain way and behave in a certain way and not say this and not say that. I think anytime you have a job somewhere, do you know what I mean? There is a, you can't behave like this area because you represent the company. So I think code of conduct. Thank you. You know, so having a code of conduct that your performers, when they work elsewhere, have to follow. I don't think there's an issue in that whatsoever. But the limiting places for the women to work when they're already extremely limited, I do think is wrong. And I'm sure there's going to be people that listen and say, "Oh, well, you want equality. You can't be treating the women any different."
But there's not equality.
So. There's not equality already, so you can't have it that way. You know, if it was an equal playing field, absolutely. You know, but it's not. And so, and that's the problem.
Have you guys had any conversations with them about working with yourselves in an all-female basis to make sure their talent are getting more?
No, I think it was reported in, I think it might have been The Observer or somewhere, there'd been a reach out from them to us, and that's not the case at all. So, and I wouldn't expect that to be honest with you.
We are an 18-plus promotion
So are ICW, though, and they're working with ICW.
Yeah, there was... Eve's regular shows are 18-plus, but we do shows that aren't 18-plus. Like, we did the Women of the World Festival. The Wrestle Queendom event at York Hall was...
Strong Women's Style was
a family friend. Strong Women's Style, which is where we're looking to break the record for the most attended women's wrestling event on September the 29th at the Walthamstow Assembly Hall. That is an open-to-all-ages event. We'd like to do more open-to-all-ages events, but... the fact is every month we do put on these events, and you're right about ICW. One may argue there's a level of hypocrisy there, which is a fair argument without knowing any more details, because ICW, last time I checked, were an 18-plus promotion. I think Progress used to be an 18-plus promotion, didn't they? It used to be that the whole mantra was this is wrestling for grown-ups or wrestling for adults, but I know that they're 14-plus now.
Yeah, a lot of it depends on the venue, etc., but I think it's 14-plus with an adult, 18-plus.
14-plus with an adult, 16-plus without.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, that's according to their Facebook page right
yeah.
now. So... So Progress have evidently brought their shows down to be to a degree in line with what I guess WWE are wanting. I don't know. I haven't looked to see if ICW have actually quietly done the same thing.
I need to check this, but I think they still promote themselves as being. And
well, it's promoting yourself.
Certainly, when we had Mark on the phone in one of our early shows, he still very much pushes it as being. Wrestling for grown-ups, you can come here, you can drink, you can swear, you can, that's what they want to certainly present themselves as.
Yeah, but there's a number of promotions where you could argue that they're a pro wrestling show for grown-ups, but they're actually all ages, because there's no governing body in the pro wrestling scene, so you're only really governed by your own conscience. So there's nothing to stop a promotion from, marketing themselves as something for, adults, but actually allowing, on the technical side, someone under that age in or from, 12 or 14 in.
We do also have a large banner on our wall during shows that says Pile Driver Fascist and has... What you could argue is...
Someone that looks like, resembles the image of that of Donald Trump being pile driven by a woman.
Excellent.
So I would imagine, there are images.
That he's in the Hall of Fame, right?
We're socialist people ourselves. We're politically minded and feminist minded with everything that there is going on.
We support a lot of charities as well, not just for mental health, but sex workers' rights.
Yeah.
We're politically outspoken, again, because I don't see why we shouldn't be.
Emily's always said, if you've got the ability to have a voice, then, make the voice heard for a good cause.
If you have a platform, there's a thing that's happening at the moment on Twitter, and it's so amazing, where these celebrities who have got a massive following will lend out their Twitter for a few hours to charities and organisations, and they'll do Q&As, and it's such an amazing thing to do, and it is what everyone should be doing. You've got this platform now, help educate people on things.
Yeah,
and that's so for me, I was always going to talk about mental health because it's so misunderstood, and I was always going to talk about things that I feel are unacceptable,
and these are things that Emily's been told repeatedly that she shouldn't talk about by people in the business.
Oh yes,
by high profile people in the business that you've had on this show. So, they're told, you shouldn't talk about that because of this reason. You shouldn't talk, you should just keep it, just only make it about wrestling. Why? Is everything else that we, think of it, if people really want to think about it, when they watch WWE's show and they see an advert for, I don't know, Popeye Chicken or whatever it is, Pancakes Company, or, do you know what I mean? Think about when Emily talks about mental health and feminism. Think about that as our product placement then. If that's what's going to make people feel better, because they don't seem to have a problem with seeing KFC, advertised on television in front of them. But so Emily
We're very open. I mean, it's literally on our website. I said it at the beginning. We're a feminist punk DIY wrestling company, or women's wrestling company. It's not a gimmick and it's not a lie. This is who I am, this is what I look like, this is what I believe in, it's that, so that's what I'm going to talk about. Yeah, so I've made it very clear on the advertising.
I can't imagine WWE being okay with any of that.
Yeah, and that's fair. And politics in sports and sports entertainment, as somebody who works a lot in American sports, is particularly with the NFL, is obviously a huge conversation at the moment and always will be. And so it is. I absolutely no issue with people nailing their colours to the mast and saying, but there will be people who are scared by that because they think it alienates an element of their audience.
Which means they're putting the value of the pound over, you know, anything else.
You know, I do get the odd tweet saying, well, well done for alienating this part of your audience. And I'm like, I don't want you in my audience. That's fine. And it's the weirdest thing that I'm not. They then struggle to understand that I'm not trying to appease them and appeal to them. So they're like, well, I don't like that you've done that. And I say, OK. And they're like, but I don't like it. It's like, that's fine. that's completely OK. You don't have to like it. And it's very funny.
I feel like we could be here for kind of hours trying to set the world to right. And it is great. And I'm really glad that you guys have been able to come in and have this conversation. And it's one that, like I said to you earlier, we were talking about maybe getting a third party in, a wrestler in with us today. And it's certainly a conversation I want to continue having anyway. So it's something that we will continue talking about. But on the pure wrestling side of things, two things we need to do. First of all, plug shows you've got coming up. But also I want to ask you about, you talked about the talent that are out there. Who are the female wrestlers that if you're listening to this show and you've maybe been to the odd Progress show, the odd, I don't know, we seem to get a lot of people that go to Riptide, listen to our show, which is great. I really enjoy Riptide, or Fight Club Pro, or wherever it is you end up going, but you may be only kind of gracing the UK scene. Who are the female wrestlers here who they should be making sure that they are au fait with? And you can just list it if you want.
It's so many, and we do have to do the very clear in no particular order. And
yeah. Absolutely.
And it's going to be awful because I know that I will miss people. And to me, I'll keep saying, well, obviously. And obviously, Mako Samura and Kaylee Ray and Viper, Rhea O'Reilly, Sami Zayn, Jamie Hayter, Nina Samuels.
Yeah.
I've just taken a deep breath, and Addie Starr, Millie McKenzie.
Addie Starr gets ignored and overlooked so much.
Rhea still gets overlooked somewhat as well. Yeah. It just blows my mind. And
I think if you just go ahead and watch the Wrestle Queendom show.
Yes.
And I know that sounds like self-publicity.
Self-promotion is not a problem.
But watch the Wrestle Queendom show. And the thing is, that show took place, right? And it just sounds like, because the thing is, I like Glenn. I get on well with Glenn at Progress. So I'm not trying to say, but we had a bunch of the Progress roster that were working that weekend come down to Wrestle Queendom.
I know a lot of people who went to both shows, who were at Super Strong Style and then came down. Like, there was a glut of people who walked out of the show, didn't go to the little after party and walked straight and got on a bus, and that's where they were heading, and that's great.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I had to work. I really wanted to do the same thing, but
the overall response that we had was that Wrestle Queendom blew every single other show that happened that weekend. And it wasn't just Progress. There was numerous other promotions that shows that happened. That's, people say, like, this is us bragging. This isn't bragging. We weren't the ones in the ring.
Yeah.
So this isn't us bragging as Emily and Dan Reed. It's nothing for us to be able to say.
It's like me being like a proud mama. Like, seeing all these women and seeing under the pressure, they all knew how much it meant, and they all wanted it to be the best performance of their life from everyone on the roster. There was no one there like, but I want mine to be the very best.
No,
literally everyone. It was a fully, I can't quite express into words how close of a unit the roster are in supporting each other and wanting everyone to look amazing.
Casey Owens, there's another one.
Of course. And Leah, she's taking time off with injury, but she's such brilliant. Martina, obviously.
Martina.
Wrestle Queendom, one of the things that made it so amazing, obviously with Dan, when he puts together the matches, he had it as, this is our big main event, this is our Wrestle Kingdom, or WrestleMania. But everyone was going out there to do an amazing job. That's what was on their mind, that they were going to do the best that they could and maybe somehow a little bit better. And the atmosphere was magic because everyone knew they were watching history and everyone was there. And everyone was putting on their best performance. And so us bragging about it as us, like, proud parents, because we knew they could do it. And, oh, they didn't buckle under that pressure.
No, go and watch that show, because that's a quality show right there. Yeah. And at the end of the day, you know, if you went and saw a wrestling show that weekend and, you know, the amount of people that went to Wrestle Queendom came out saying, but that was the best show of the weekend, don't then be going, oh, but they're fans of women's wrestling, because right then you've put a bias that you're not going to enjoy it, because you've put a bias that only a person who likes women's wrestling could say that. You know, go ahead and watch it just as a wrestling show.
Aaron and Jetta and Chris Wolf.
Oh, Jetta's doing the best work of her career right now. Jetta is just on form. On the last show that we had Kayla Ray versus Chris Wolf. Everyone was like, that's going to be the match of the night. It was an amazing match, but Jetta and Laura Di Matteo actually had
Laura
the match
Di Matteo, and I didn't say, you know, did I say Charlie Morgan? Did I say our champion's
name? You actually haven't mentioned Charlie Morgan yet.
Well, because she's the champion.
We don't
so
need
it's
to mention the contract to performers. But and this is something that we're trying to replicate as well on September 29th with Strong Women's Style at the Walthamstow Assembly Hall. One other thing just before we wrap up that I do want to go into, because Emily mentioned about the talent investment program that we've done, where we've sent wrestlers over the last 6 years to Japan. Another thing we've done, which again I'm guessing because it's women, it hasn't been, nobody's making a big deal about it, but I bet you if it was men they would, we've actually partnered up with the Bishopsgate Institute to create an actual Women's Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame. It will be a place where people can actually go and see these things. They can see what's put in, you know, pictures, stories, articles about these women that are going. This isn't a Hall of Fame that's in Emily's head. This isn't a Hall of Fame that's in my head. This isn't a Hall of Fame that's just, you know, written in a book. It's not in a living room. This is a genuine Hall of Fame.
In 500 years, scholars and, well, really anyone can go and have this, the Women's Wrestling History pulled from the archive, and they can look at it.
Great.
We are stored next to the suffragettes' original sashes and banners.
Yeah.
We are, and they contacted us because they saw what we were doing and they just thought, well, this looks amazing, and they record women's history, and then they were looking into it more and more, and it is the same
developed.
As it often is, that women's history is erased often or not spoken on. But sorry, carry on.
No, you hit it. You know what you're talking about. It's your promotion.
It's just, we announced it to our roster before Wrestle Queendom, and they were crying because it's those women like Mitzi and Klondike Kate who people don't hold in the same regard as Johnny Sane, and they should.
Yeah.
And people aren't talking. And these women, they know what they went through, and they know that they couldn't be here if it wasn't for these women. And they know that there are women all across the world who are wrestlers who have been through the same, and no one remembers them. Someone that we spoke to, she doesn't actually have any memorabilia at all from her wrestling days. She has no footage, no newspaper article clips, no posters, nothing. Because it was seen as that you were just like a mark and you were mocked for it if you kept everything and things like that. And she has nothing at all. So we're actually going round and I'm contacting collectors and contacting people who were wrestlers at the time, men who did keep things and were that was fine for them. And we're asking them, what have you got? What can you send us? And we're collecting it. So not only am I putting it in the archive, it's like I'm giving back bits to the women who were there wrestling, but not allowed to have anything there to record. And the worst bit is when you keep, I keep getting in tears over it, when I keep getting thanked by some of the people I'm talking to, like, oh, wow, are you really sure? Me, though, and I'm not this. And you just think, How could you think of yourself as not worth being put there?
Because they were told for a long time, or treated for a long time, they weren't.
Yeah.
Look, next show coming up next weekend at the Resistance Gallery.
Yeah, there's...
Go on, you've been good at plugging so far.
Slayers in Spandex.
Slayers in Spandex.
We're good at naming shows.
So Slayers in Spandex is next Saturday with... it's a hell of a card, actually. Tony Storm versus Jetta. We're beginning the She-1 qualifiers, really. We've just started the She-1 qualifiers. Monday McKenzie was the first one. She-1 is our big weekend tournament that we do every year, four shows over 2 days. That takes place every November. And these are the qualifying matches to see. It's basically the G1. That's where She-Won is.
Yeah, you know, great She-Won.
So,
very good.
So
good.
It's our G1. Four shows over 2 days. So we're doing the qualifiers at the moment. And we've got Eve Champion Charlie Morgan against Casey in one of them. Laura Di Matteo against Charlie Evans. But one of... it's just like four incredible matches, and one of the main matches that I've seen a lot of people going about, as well as Charlie Morgan and Casey, which there's also a bit of backstory to, is the first time meeting between Kaylee Ray and Killer Kelly. A lot of people are very excited about. But there's seven matches on that show, as well as we also have other performers on that show as well. It really is a celebration
of strong women.
Exactly. And that is next Saturday, July 14, at the Resistance Gallery in Bethnal Green. There's a handful of tickets left at the moment,
and tickets for Strong Women's Style, for She-Won, for our Shevolution shows, and for our Eve shows are available on our website, which is evewrestling.com.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about Shevolution, our other brand.
Flip. Oh, it's our NXT. I can do it. That's the quickest way. We decided, because the women weren't being given the chance to get up to the Eve level, we figured we'd do... We'd do it. So we made another brand.
For those women to get,
And so those are our NXT shows, basically.
Yeah.
And it's... Again, it's fantastic. And for me, I love it. I love seeing people just get better and better. And it's great. It's great to see.
Sorry, are we keeping that guy out?
No, okay, not at all. Brilliant stuff, guys. Really appreciate Emily, Dan, Reed both coming in and kind of talking us through all of that. And I hope that maybe some people who wouldn't have gone to a show previously will come along to one of those shows and see what it's all about, and go out and watch Wrestle Queendom and find that on demand and go and watch that and try and, try and see that it is worth going and watch. Because, I'm really, really pleased that you've come in. So thank you so much for your time.
No, cheers for
having
us.
Thank you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.